Welcome to the fifth episode of the Peas in the Podcast, where we discuss trends and provide commentary on media and social justice issues, as well as personal life experiences. The podcast is hosted by Starlisha, Jameer, and Daphne. The pods are the articles and stories that are abuzz in our society and culture, and the peas are our own thoughts and takes on those concepts.
All right, so I'm going to kick it off this week, and I'm going to talk about food. It's no It is no secret that I love food. I love trying new restaurants, and I enjoy deviating from the usual wings and fries that my favorite Lancaster bars serve. I love American food. I love Ethiopian food. I love Irish food. I love Chinese food. I love Spanish food. I love Thai food. I love Italian food. And I love comfort food. Oh my gosh, do I love comfort food. I've been known to cry while eating mac and cheese. My mom's meatloaf is amazing. And the first time I tried Auntie Cooked Soul Food, there was also crying. Last year, and I'm about to tell you that story. Last year, I managed to snag tickets to the new Smithsonian property, the National Museum of African American History and Culture, which, by the way, everyone of every color needs to go to ASAP. And just a little side note, this is a non-sponsored suggestion, but October 2018 tickets are released on July 11th, and they're free. The only thing you're responsible for is getting your black ass to Washington, D.C., and having some money for some food. That's all you have to pay for. So you just got to do it. Everyone has to do it.
You know we love free.
Right? They knew what they were doing with this whole setup there. They really, really did. So I went with a guy I was dating at the time and two of his friends.
But I still want reparations.
Reparations. So. No.
Just because it's free don't mean all reparations. Gotta make that clear.
Gotta get their money for all those exhibits somehow. True. So I went with the guy I was dating at the time and two of his friends. So it's a group of four black millennials all hungry to learn about our ancestors and hungry for the food court. The Sweet Home Cafe at NMAAHC has four lines. Each line represents a region in the United States. The Agricultural South, the Creole Coast, the North States, and the Western Range. The executive chef is Jerome Grant, who previously had a tenure at the National Museum of the American Indian. Grant's kitchen at the Museum of African American History and Culture received a James Beard nomination for Best New Kitchen or Restaurant in 2017. Sweet Home Cafe's culinary ambassador is Carla Hall, who's a black woman, and she has been a contestant on two seasons of Top Chef. I'm not sure what a culinary advisor does, but she's doing it well. And Jerome Grant is also a black man. So, they really know what they're doing here. So after spending way too much time in the 1400s to the 1960s, which is down at the bottom of the museum, which is great, by the way, I love history. I'm such a history nerd. And there's really no such thing as too much time in those areas. But we spent a lot of time down there and it kind of ruined the rest of it. Didn't ruin it, but we didn't get to the music and the TV until about 10 minutes before they closed because our timed passes were for the afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That is how much stuff. I think our time passes were for 2:30 or 2:45. And we spent so much time downstairs in the history. And then we ate. And then we started doing present day history, quote unquote. And we barely made it upstairs to the TV and sports and music. We did it quickly, but you really, truly need 2 days if you're going to go to this museum. There's no way. So we eventually got hungry, and we ventured back upstairs to the Sweet Home Cafe. And my heart and my soul and my insulin pump and my entire being was just feeling so called to the Agricultural South. This is the menu for the Agricultural South. Buttermilk fried chicken served with two sides.
Yep. Glory! Okay.
Lexington-style barbecue pork sandwich with slaw, pickled watermelon rind, and potato salad.
What?
Slow-cooked collards, cornbread sticks, and pot liquor.
This is blankety-blank.
And
blank.
Sweet corn pudding. Literally every...
Only thing missing is Big Mama.
Literally
Come
every
on, y'all.
Person working behind that counter was black. A black man or a black woman. Every single person. Maybe a few Hispanics in there. A few Latino and Latinas. Maybe. But mostly all black employees. And for me, this is the first time I've ever taken that foray into like, okay, I'm going to be serious about learning about my culture and my history. So to see that in the food section, I was like, of course, duh. Like, of course everyone here is black. Why wouldn't they be? Like, almost every tour guide we ran into was African American or black of some sort. And I was like, this is great. It was just brilliant. So I decided on the buttermilk fried chicken, and I got a side of greens and a side of mac and cheese. And the mac and cheese was down to the bottom of the pan, and the really nice guy serving was like, hey, why don't you ladies wait? We'll get you a fresh pan of mac and cheese. And we were like, no, really, it's okay. In fact, can you scrape the sides for us? So the guy, like, the guy took his scoop, and he's scraping the sides, and he ended up giving us extra mac and cheese because he just wanted to finish out, like, the container of it.
Man.
So he gave us, like, each extra, and that was so great. Like, he didn't need to do that, but we were so hungry. We were like, we don't really care. Like, it's down at the bottom. It's going to be hot anyway.
Nobody got you like we got
right?
you.
Yeah, that was exactly that situation. I was like, I really don't get... Because what do they do with the extra, like, three scoops that stuck to the side of the pan? They probably save it for their own meal, but, like, some of those places just throw out food. Right,
out?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, like, give me the mac and cheese. I don't care if it's maybe not as hot. So the four of us sat down at a table, we blessed the food, and I picked up that piece of greasy hot chicken. I closed my eyes and I took a bite. And I think the only words that came out of my mouth were, oh my golly. It was amazing. It was crunchy and it was juicy and it was cooked to absolute perfection. And the greens... Oh, now my white sister can throw down some really mean collard greens thanks to her living in a city for over 2 decades, but like spicy, like actually spiced good greens. Like she knows how to do it. She learned from an African lady. So like,
I mean, but she ain't had my grandmama greens.
Oh, true.
My grandmama greens. I've seen people lick plates, Doug. I've seen people lick plates.
I've had some good greens.
People that don't finish meals, I've seen them lick
really?
Plates on my grandmama's greens. I've witnessed it with my own eyes.
I feel like everybody think they grandma greens.
Nah,
like
dog.
If you don't think your grandma can cook greens, then you don't love her.
That's just a standard black rule. You cannot say that your grandma's greens ain't the greatest greens. But my grandma's greens is the greatest greens. That's all I know.
I don't even like greens like that. My grandma be fucking it up.
I'm going to tell you this right now. My dad and my brother do not eat pork. They don't eat pork. My grandma, she only makes her greens with pork. My dad, she made him a nice old bowl, gave to him, told him it was some turkey meat, and he licked that shit dry.
That probably fucked this fucking all up. I know it did too.
To this day, he still don't know. Hopefully, he don't listen to this
episode. Pork is really hard on your stomach, especially if you
haven't
eaten in a while.
But he looked her square in the eye and said, "Cheryl, these are the best greens I ever had in my life. These are the best greens." That's all I'm gonna say. That's all I'm gonna say. Your sister's greens might be good,
sure,
but they not my grandmama's greens.
Of course,
that's
not.
All I know.
But these greens though were slow cooked to perfection. They're juicy, they were salty, they were a little spicy, but not too much, but like just that right amount of heat in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the mac and cheese, I took a bite, I cried a little bit, and I said, they got someone's auntie in that kitchen back there. I could really genuinely taste the love that went into that food. And I need to go back three more times to try all the other food. It was just so great. It was one of those moments where I was like, this is what I wanted.
You met one of the ancestors,
didn't you? I really, truly did. And I snapped some pictures, but the quote that stood out to me the most was from Maya Angelou. And it said, I'm concerned that Americans are losing that place of meeting. There are very few times we can be more intimate as to share food together. And I was like, yeah. I was like, damn, sis, that's deep, but it's true. Like,
nobody ever tried to fight somebody over a good meal.
Right? Right?
Nobody ever had to get hands on over a good meal.
That's right. Except for that time in Lancaster where somebody stabbed somebody with a king crab leg because they took the last one or something. Oh, yeah, it's a total thing. At a Chinese buffet. Yeah. Yeah, apparently. So then they they were at a Chinese buffet.
I love a Chinese buffet.
And some lady took the last king crab leg, so some other lady like took a crab leg and stabbed her with it. So then they stopped. So then they stopped serving king crab legs for like a year or two.
They were like, y'all can't handle
this. Like, we're going to take the toys away from the children. Y'all can't. Y'all can't act like adults.
Not like that king crab.
Mm-hmm. But I frequently say, seriously and jokingly, that one of my love languages is food. Connecting with someone over a meal is one of my favorite things to do. And how can you not enjoy soul food? You could probably get the most racist person ever, and if you gave him or her the right plate of greens, they would probably love it. They might not like the hands that prepared it, but like, how could you not like mac and cheese and greens and beans and ham? Yeah, you know, like everything. Just, you name it.
Green, beans, potatoes, tomatoes.
I think a great way to solve racism is to get a bowl of New England clam chowder and some fried chicken and greens, and we just start right there. Right? Simple.
So slap that nose in collard greens.
So this whole thing was inspired by this TV show that David and I have been watching called Ugly Delicious. If you guys haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. David Chang is the host. He's a Korean man, and he has restaurants. But the episode we watched last week was I'm calling it the fried chicken episode. And he travels around the South and tries different fried chicken places. But I will literally talk for 45 minutes if I start talking about that. So consider this part one of this two-part racial politics and chicken series that I'm going to do. Because it was so fascinating hearing him talk with these older black women about the history of fried chicken and what that meant as a black person in the South in the 1800s and what that means as a black person in the South in 2018 and what gentrification of chicken looks like, what the variations look like, and what the implications are now. So I will definitely be talking about that in a future episode.
Bless.
Yep. So real quick, what do you guys, we already know about Daphne's grandma's greens, but what are your other favorite dishes? Because you guys have grown up with this tradition of soul food, whereas I have.
That's so crazy.
Like, I mean, I like comfort food, but like Pennsylvania Dutch comfort food is all butter and it's great, but I don't have that tradition of the soul,
like seeing food. Your grandma cook the soul food on like Sundays, right. And like
it was pot roast and veggies, which is great, and I love it, but
see, my favorite thing, like, although my grandma's greens are great and her mac and cheese is bomb, my favorite thing, like, to eat of my grams and, like, just all around bomb, her candied yams. Like, I know that recipe, like, the fucking back of my goddamn hand. Oh, that's new. Okay. I know that recipe. Like, the back of my damn hand. And I, like, the yams are soft, they're flavored, they're sweet. And she doesn't even do, like, the, you know, like, a lot of people put, like, the marshmallows and stuff on it? She doesn't even do that.
Only white people do that.
White people co-opted that, didn't they? No, black people put the marshmallows on it, too?
Yeah, black people always been putting marshmallows on yams.
Not my type of black.
My grandma don't. My grandma don't put the marshmallows on the John. She just got the good, it's just the good yam. Like, that's all I know. I know that there's a lot of cinnamon, and then she takes those yams, like, during Thanksgiving. Normally, she'll make the regular, like, the yams or whatever. But during Thanksgiving, she takes those leftover yams and makes this, like, sweet potato pie. And
oh, my mom does that, too.
Niggas. Whew! That sweet potato pie, that should have you real right. Real sweet, but real right.
Wait, she makes sweet potato pie with yams?
I don't know the difference between yams and sweet potatoes.
I mean, let's talk about that black
one.
I call them all the same thing.
Right.
One is South American.
Nigga, if I
African.
Picked up two, they're going to look the same to me. I have had this debate so many different times. All I know is that I call them yams, but I call it sweet potato pie, even though they're made with the thing I call yams. That's all I know. So maybe it's sweet potatoes that she's making. I don't fucking know.
Actually, in America, you really can't buy yams.
So then it's sweet potatoes.
The yams that we buy are actually a different type of sweet potato.
Okay, so then my grandma's out here making sweet potatoes, but I've been calling them yams for 99
years. That we call them
that's it. That's all I
we
know.
We call them yams.
I think that's part of the oral tradition is, okay, well, this thing is it was a yam to our ancestors. Okay, I'm drawing this from one of my favorite kids' books, Mufaro's Beautiful Daughters. They talk about, and that's an African tale, and they talk about yams in that book. So I'm assuming yams is the African version, and sweet potato would be the American, South American.
Yeah. Actually, I did. I asked Tina this before, and Tina was like, yeah, yams, you can get them in, like, Nigeria and stuff. And she was like, I grew up with yams, but coming to America, it's...
Yams are nasty.
She's like, yeah, she said it's a little bit more bitter, and we're like, our taste buds wouldn't be really acquired for it.
Don't know. Yams are nasty.
But she said that...
She's trying to spit it around.
When you taste it, you'll know the difference between a sweet potato and a yam. But on average, what we're calling yams are not yams.
Yeah.
So that's fair. But that's my favorite dish.
Jameer, what's yours?
Her sweet potato.
I think mine is probably a macaroni and cheese. Like macaroni and cheese and maybe pulled pork and stuff like that. Mm.
So we got to get you in the kitchen.
But I love, I love ribs too. I feel like ribs taste, I feel like ribs really like accentuate the taste of macaroni and cheese.
Yams do, bro. Sweet potatoes.
Like the barbecue sauce
the
and like the
pulled
grease,
pork just, on the mac and cheese. It's amazing.
Oh, I mean, that's great.
It's amazing.
But have you had the sweet potatoes on the mac and cheese? If not.
Yeah, I do that all the time with the sweet potato juice.
All that shit gets mixed.
No, because the juice is so like...
I did not have candied yams until this year. My mom makes them every year. My sister makes them every year. But I'm like, I don't like it. I don't like the way it looks. The texture is weird. And there's the
whole blood sugar thing to contend with.
Because when I had it for the
it looks like fully orange because listen it should be so well flavored that it is fucking
brown.
It should be so much cinnamon brown
like you smell
sugar,
the cinnamon and
the
brown
butter.
Sugar
like come on
it's
bro
like
a, it's a lot to this thing
for me But I
it's mushy though. It's like it's literally the texture of mashed potatoes.
I don't know, but I had them.
If you are eating sweet potatoes in the form of squares, and it's not like salt, like you the ones that I made that you saw me eating, if those when you just hit them and they don't like just immediately mush up in your mouth, you're not doing it right. Not doing it right.
I don't know how they were doing.
There's a little bit of grit. I never in had them. If there's a little bit of chew, there should be no chew. There should be no chew. There should just be moisture. That's it.
Yeah, the ones I had this year, I forget. I helped host like a Black History Month event, and we had a caterer, and they were. Oh no, we didn't have caterers. The place where it was hosted has a full kitchen, and there were aunties and grandmas and sisters back there whipping up the food for everyone. And I was like, how have I never eaten candied yams before? I want 5 plates of these, please. They were so good. Without the marshmallow, I think.
Yeah, no marshmallow. No marshmallow. You know,
like, that marshmallow, that's what they do at buffets and in white people's kitchens.
The marshmallow thing's a no. It's a no.
Hell no.
It's a no.
No, to make them sweet, sometimes my grandma, she puts some pineapples.
One.
No, and like it's really good.
I wouldn't doubt you, but my grandma don't need no extra stuff. Oh, shade.
Is she putting brown sugar too?
Oh, shade.
If you say so.
Okay. We gotta move into the next roll along. So, in global perspective today, the 8th Amendment of Ireland was tossed out. For women of the small country, this overturn means the end of a long era of policing women's bodies, and abortions will now be legalized in Ireland. So I know this came about maybe like 2-3 weeks ago or whatever, but I'm just catching you guys up, you know, just catching up. Anyways, poll results showed a positive turn now in repealing the 8th Amendment. The women of Ireland are now fully accepted into the 21st century and have gained liberation of their bodies. Unfortunately, this is still debatable for women in America. Also, however, this is not true for all Irish women. So hear me out. Northern Irish women are set under stricter laws that are as archaic as American gun laws. A selection for the article states, Northern Ireland has the strictest abortion laws in the UK and cases of rape, incest, and fatal fetal abnormalities are not considered grounds for a legal termination. In other news, Kim Jong-un and Trump are on-again, off-again lovers in regards to this goddamn summit that they were supposed to be having. Remember that thing I talked about previously in Global Perspective? Yeah, so it was on, then it was off, the meeting, talking about ending Korean War and all that other stuff. God only knows what happened with that. And finally, in most recent global news, Emmanuel Macron is fighting the war on fake news. Trump better call and get them alternative facts and fake news checks, since everybody's out here constantly talking about fake news, and this man sure enough created it. So basically, what France's president Emmanuel Macron plans to do is have social media users flag media posts they believe to be untrue. The police will then investigate it, and then a judge will have 48 hours to say if it's true or not.
What?
And this ban would apply during the 3 months before French elections. Right. Exactly. 48 hours. Think about all of the crazy media shit that you see on the daily. Every time it gets reported, a judge would have to review it within 48 hours to decide if he wants to keep it or toss it out.
Who's paying for this?
Clearly, somebody in France. So clearly... Folks on the left and the right sides of politics are not pleased with this idea, but there's a chance of success due to conversations between Macron and Mark Zuckerberg and other countries' crackdowns on fake news. So in Italy, actually, they're doing the same exact thing. I don't think it's I don't think it's mandated that you have to report it, but they do have the police show up when somebody does report a case of fake news, so that they can weed out false narratives and stuff, so the public has a more truer journalistic I just want to call it a pot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, anyways, much like American politics, we will have to wait and see how this all plays out. First, it has to be passed by the National Assembly and then the Senate. And that's a wrap on Global Perspective. All the links will be provided down below in the description as they normally are. But moving on to my topic, God, brace yourself. Donald Trump has pardoned a black woman. Yay! Come on, guys. Come on. Oy. Give me a clap. Really? All right, fuck y'all. Anyway, with the assistance of none other, and he's done this with the assistance of none other than Kim Kardashian West herself.
My Nubian queen.
You are not going to be problematic on this episode, Jameer. You are not going to do
problematic. Y'all know I love you, Kim.
You know what? You know, I can take him. I can take him. What were you saying,
Sarah? Can I just say that I fell prey to the fake news cycle on this one? Also, I'm lazy. So, like, well, it's not hard for me to do that. But it was fascinating to me to watch Facebook for the 13, 14 hours that this was happening. Maybe 24 hours. First of all, it was Kim Kardashian is going to the White House to talk about prison reform. Then it was Kim Kardashian is going to the White House to talk about prison reform. Then it was suddenly Kim Kardashian met with Donald Trump and now a black woman has been pardoned. And I'm like, well, what the hell was she doing? Are we talking about prison reform for brown boys who get caught with a dime bag of weed and get sent to jail for 10 years? Are we talking about prison reform and rights for transgender prisoners? Are we talking about prison reform and how the prison system is just a big money-grabbing I was like, I don't... And then suddenly there was this black woman who was free. I had never heard of her before. I still don't know her name, which I'm embarrassed to say that out loud, but like...
Same.
Is it Alice...
Jones Damn, or Johnson or... I don't even know. I don't know why she was in prison to begin with.
Wait, I think
she was...
I think this is ringing back in my brain. Hold on.
It was something about weed.
Yes, this is ringing back in my head. Kim Kardashian had posted about her, I think, a year or two ago.
Okay.
Yeah, Kim Kardashian posted about this particular woman a year or two ago. Because this woman started selling drugs to feed her family or something. I think she had lost her job. She had a decent job. She was doing everything right. Somehow she ended up losing her job. Couldn't get hired anywhere. So she started selling drugs.
Okay.
And the sentencing that she got was like a life sentence when it really should have only been like 6 months or something.
Okay.
Like, they threw the whole fucking book at her. And so Kim Kardashian was talking about how unfair it is that she was really just trying to hustle to feed her kids. And
Kim
was talking about this beforehand.
Right.
And now, when she met with Trump, it was like, this is the first issue on my chopping block. Anyway.
Okay.
I guess we'll have to take the gains, even if they're small. Right? However, Trump is...
What? I was just going to say, I mean, yes, because, okay, this is a whole different conversation, but, like, we've all always underestimated Kim Kardashian. I'll say it. Like, everyone...
No. Okay, I have.
Maybe not everyone, but a lot of people have underestimated her, and I think, whatever. Between her and Paris Hilton, there are some really smart business ladies out there, and she knows how to get shit done, so I admire it. Continue.
I have always...
She got that girl out of jail. Right? Anybody else do it? I heard that she's working with her lawyers to get more people out of jail.
I have said this from the rip. People love to bring up, oh, the Kardashians, why do we care about them? And this reality starts. And I'm like, listen, somebody's still watching it. They're making money. I don't give a fuck who Kim Kardashian fucked and then magically made her way up. There are tons of people fucking for free who don't have a $58+ million industry. Mm-hmm. Kim Kardashian did it.
Also,
girl is a businesswoman. She got her family on.
There's a lot of people sucking dick.
And ain't got no money. Kim Kardashian did it. And like,
also her
kudos to fucking her. And it's not about. Yeah,
like,
no,
her dad's a lawyer.
Don't get me wrong.
So she wasn't raised dumb. Like,
Her dad died when she was fairly young, though. So
right, but like, you can still have the whole like.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. She grew up in affluence. Yeah. Like, she, you know.
She had the resources.
But still, there are people who also have resources, sucking dick for free, and still ain't got that clout. And people try, I feel like.
They're doing it right now, too.
Somebody's Yo, busting sis, the nut in the mouth. Anyway, trying to get back on my topic here. So, Donald Trump is now asking NFL players who kneel, who they would like to pardon or feel was mistreated by the justice system. And like, yes, but also no. Look, I am more than happy to let all the black men and women incarcerated for weed go free, since whitey folks is making millions off of it and the fact that weed has never killed anyone. But also, wasn't this the man calling those same athletes sons of bitches and what have yous? Now that Kaepernick is out of a job, suddenly we want to turn an eye to reconciliation? The leader of the kneeling movement is the very person you are not speaking to? What in all of God's green earth is going on here? It's like Trump found out yesterday that he could pull people out of jail, and by gosh, he is doing it! The Teflon Donald! Should I be happy about this? In some ways, yes. Because at least he is doing something. But what about all those alt-righters he was supporting? What about those people he was deporting? What about those on-again and off-again summits?
I heard the rhyme.
But mainly, you kept me. But mainly, what about police brutality? Wasn't that the whole kick in the door, waving the full floor? Yeah, like, we can get people of color and people out of jail now that y'all already made some money off of their labor, but what are we doing to legally stop police from abusing power? Killing unarmed teens?
Nothing.
Are we mandating laws nationwide that require sensitivity training to confront and combat implicit bias? Are we requiring these officers to do community service in the areas they serve? I just feel like Colin Kaepernick should be at the forefront of any of these decisions involving the kneeling movement and its requested demands. And again, I'm always ready to see black people free. But if Trump won't confront and apologize for his previous sentiments, this feels like nothing more than a man who's discovered a card trick and wants to do it over and over again to show everyone how well he can do it. And well, I just want to know, what are y'all thoughts on Trump's pardon? Good or bad for black business?
This week I realized that he doesn't know history. Which...
Okay, well, we knew that.
We knew that. And not everyone can be great at everything. But in the same week... The guy accused Canada of setting the White House on fire in the War of 1812 when it was really the British. And then he said he was going to pardon Muhammad Ali.
Can I say something? Wait, yeah, can I say something?
Yes, please.
So I did this research on my own, and this was like right around the time of the election. And people are all like, why is Donald Trump so gung-ho on this whole Obama is not an American birther thing? And I looked up Donald Trump's age, and I did the math, to when Donald Trump was in, like, elementary school, middle school. And at the same time, Hawaii was not a state yet. So Donald Trump learned his states in elementary school, and Hawaii was not in that. And for the rest of this man's life, he has always known that Hawaii was not a state.
What?
Yeah.
He has known Hawaii was not in his whatever number of states. And so when Obama said, I was born in Hawaii, his little elementary school brain kicked in and said, listed all little states in the song or whatever. And he was like, Hawaii is not one of them. And let's think here, people. The man wasn't paying attention to shit else for the rest of his life, other than living off his dad's dime. I think he did, like, some small fake stint in, like, a business or company or something. But what the fuck does he have to care about Hawaii being a, quote, real state?
Right.
When you see places like Puerto Rico not becoming real states, they're just territories. And you see places like the U.S. Virgin Islands becoming a territory. It's not a state. We own it. But to Donald Trump, he was raised where Hawaii literally was not a state yet. And that was my philosophy on why he was so gung-ho on this stupid-ass birther thing. other than the fact of racism, that too. But the man has the brain of a fifth grader.
Literally.
There's fifth graders that are smarter than him, but he has the brain of a fifth grader. And when he was in fifth grade, Hawaii was not a state. Boom.
That is, I'm really glad you shared that, because I never, maybe someday I would have been like, LOL, why did Donald Trump think Obama's not a, like, I might have Googled it maybe in the next 10 years, but like,
that's dude, crazy. No, I kid you the fuck not. I literally one day was just like, yo, how old is Donald Trump? And I looked it up, and then I was just like, okay, hold on. Right. And somehow, I forget how I came across it, but like, no, I remember that. I was like listening to the news or something like that, and somebody had something about, they said something about like how Alaska came to be a state later on, and like the years of like when states became states, mm-hmm. like moving out of 13 colonies. Somebody was talking about that, and I was like, I wonder when Hawaii became a state. And I looked it up, and then I was like, wait a minute. And I looked up Donald Trump's age, and I did the math, and I was like, when he would have been in grade school, Hawaii was not a state yet. And I was like, boom, that's it. That gotta be it. That has to be it. Yeah. Because the man thinks on the level of a fucking fifth grader. And like everybody kept saying that. They were like, he thinks like a fifth grader. He thinks like a fifth grader. And I was like, well, when he was in fucking fifth grade, Hawaii didn't exist.
Right.
Like, boom.
Huh. So, okay. He does know history, but he hasn't evolved his history.
Boom.
So the Muhammad Boom. Ali thing struck me as amusing, because I was like, oh, can you pardon someone who's dead? That was my thought process. Can you pardon someone who's dead? Right. But then, I guess the Muhammad Ali estate or whatever released a statement that was like, there's no need for this pardon because the Supreme Court decided in favor of Muhammad Ali in 19 whatever. While we appreciate the president's effort or whatever, like, it's not necessary.
But I do know that, like, a lot of presidents, well, I don't want to say a lot. I only know about Obama doing this. Like, I think that he gave like pardons to people who were wrongfully accused of things. Like, what's his
name? He did it to people.
I think Bill Clinton did.
The thing
as well.
Is, Obama gave a pardon to people while he was still in office too. Like, this whole pardoning thing is nothing new,
right?
And I feel like we're five.
Yeah, Obama gave.
I feel like
thousands
we're a few days from Trump acting like he created it, and then once he finds out that Obama did it, it's done. It's done. He's gonna be like, oh, the brown guy did it.
He did what?
That's it. Everybody back to jail. I'm gonna round up all these niggers.
It won't be hard. They probably get the old lady on speed charges.
Right?
Be like, you get life.
I have another question. What will these pardons truly accomplish in the realm of combating injustice towards black people in the justice system?
Are you asking specifically or overall?
I'm asking overall. If we were to pardon black people and people of color who are wrongly convicted or unjustly convicted or given harsh sentences, what does that do for us? Like, when you think in terms of the labor that has already been received, when you think in terms of the families that have already been broken, the connections and fear of police, the brutality that has already been experienced, the communities that have been broken up, what do these pardons do, especially when our prison system really isn't a rehabilitation center. It's more like a holding tank.
I say, if anything, it gives us hope that, like, the justice system is changing for the better. The fact that these old cases are even being looked at. Like, for example, when a lot of people go to law school, right, they get a lot of these cases just because they're, like, law school students and their professors, like, okay, see if, like, you can work on this, see if you can work on that, because the professor couldn't care less for
them. Or there's just way too many cases.
And then, the professor really, he probably doesn't care if this person gets out or not. but it's just the fact that we're now living in this era where, like, I would say from the 1990s on, where, like, we've had presidents more cognizant of some of the injustices in the, okay, like, you know, there's presidents in it that we're going to skip. We're probably going to skip President Trump because there's only one person so far. But, like, I feel like we've definitely had a slew. We'll find two presidents I can think of, Barack and Bill, that have been more cognizant of the fallacies of the justice system as a whole. So, like, hopefully it turns into something more, especially with, like, how all these states are now legalizing weed, right? And then there's all these black and brown bodies still waiting in jail. Like, it's like that, them few little dime bags. Like, because it's never, like, a lot. It's the problem with, like, minimum sentencing and things like that. So hopefully now that this lady's story, like, is in the limelight, especially with Kim Kardashian behind her and stuff like that, we get more black people, or black and brown people that shouldn't be in jail out.
And I think it's important to focus that at a local level. I mean, I'm always going to be a champion of local politics first. Like, if you want to change something, okay, great. Vote for your municipal judges. Vote for your treasurer. Vote for your, like, constable. Like, you know, all the constable's not a voted position, but you know what I mean. Like, the local positions. That's really where you're going to affect change. So I think, hopefully, this story of this woman opens the ears of someone at a local level who says, hey, what about that kid from last year, the officer so-and-so arrested for that dime bag of weed? Can we look at his file? Just because, like, he has this thing in his brain, he or she has this thing in their brain going, maybe we should take a second look at this. Maybe it doesn't solve anything. Maybe Kim Kardashian's visit to the White House solves nothing at the local level, but maybe it inspires one officer or one attorney or one intern at the local chapter of the ACLU or the NAACP to say, hey, let's take a look at that thing. That's my hope.
Dope.
Oh boy. Oh, is it my turn? Is it time for this day in history, everyone? Great. So today, as we are recording, it is June 8th, 2018. And on this day in history, James Earl Ray, also known as the man who murdered Dr. King, was arrested at Heathrow Airport in London in 1968. Fun fact. He was sentenced to 99 years in prison for the assassination of Dr. King, which I had no idea.
Yeah,
I know. I was like, oh. And when I started doing this segment, those were the first two sentences I wrote. And I was like, I don't want to pay any attention to this guy. Like, let's not give him any time at all. But then I started reading his Wikipedia page. And we all know how I feel about Wikipedia pages. It's just a wealth of information. And I was like, oh boy, it is just a total train wreck and I cannot look away. So you're all gonna hear everything about it. So this dude escaped from Leavenworth Prison in 1967 by hiding in the back of a bread truck that was leaving the grounds. First of all, what are you doing?
First of all, it was real easy to escape prison in that era.
1967. Oh, so you could walk out. The gate was accidentally open. You could just leave.
You know?
Yeah. So then he went to Mexico and he tried becoming an adult film director.
What?
He changed his name and everything.
What guy?
Yeah.
This is
he was trying.
Cricket.
He took pictures.
It's funny because it works in more than three ways. Because he literally fired a shot. Then he was directing, which is also called shooting on film. And because it's in the porn industry, he's shooting
the money from his shot.
The trifecta. I got you, Jimmy. I got
Thanks
you.
Thanks for making me say it. So he started just by taking pictures and trying to do small films with the sex workers down in Mexico. And apparently he was jilted by one of them whom he had fallen in love with. So he moved back to the U.S. And he became a fan of George Wallace, who was a presidential candidate at the time, running on, you guessed it, a segregationist platform. James Earl Ray volunteered for this guy's campaign.
Yo, my man had big cojones. He said, I don't...
So you volunteer for a presidential campaign and he's a felon?
Exactly. My man got big cojones.
I think at the time he was still using his other name that he had, like, given himself when he moved to Mexico. So he was not...
But nobody had a photo of him in, like, 67, though?
Guess not.
All right. Okay. Yep.
So, apparently... He, quote, considered immigrating to Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, where a predominantly white minority regime had unilaterally assumed independence from the United Kingdom in 1965.
Wait.
Yeah, let's unpack that for a white second people, because
So white people who hate black people decided to move their ass from the caves of Europe onto African soil and try to stake claim.
And then became an independent, gained their independence from the UK.
I actually did a project on
white
Zimbabwe.
White people, won't they do it?
So what's funny is the white people, right, they also brought in a lot of like Pakistani and a lot of Indian people into Zimbabwe. And they, the way that they like, stratified the society pretty much. Black people were at the bottom, Pakistani and Indian people were in the middle, and then white people, even though there was like, they were like the smallest in population at the top. And like, I don't know, like the black people started leaving. They were like, wait a damn.
And apparently that was his intended destination after he assassinated Dr. King. He was like in the Heathrow airport on his way to Rhodesia when they took him in. Is that crazy? But, however, the Rhodesian government expressed their disapproval of him through and through.
Hell no.
So, you know, apparently racism is fine, but murder is bad. I don't know. Whatever. March 24th, 1968, that started his 10-day countdown to that fateful day in Memphis. 2 months and 4 days later, on June 8th, he was found. And then he died in prison in 1988, only 19 years into his 99-year sentence. And he died from hepatitis C.
Damn.
Deuces, James Earl Ray. No one liked you anyway.
For all that, somebody could have just beat him up.
Now, normally we say fuck Taylor Swift on this podcast, but today we're going to give one big old blackety black middle finger to say fuck you, James Earl Ray. Fuck you.
So, like, I was on Facebook a few days ago, and I seen, like, these really crazy headlines. I thought it was fake news. It was, like, delivery man gets deported. I'm like, the what? Like, what was he delivering? So, it starts off, like, okay, I'm going to butcher this man's last name. So Pablo V.
At least try
a delivery man. Who
it's
may
like
be
Villa Vicencio. Huh? Villa Vicencio. Come on.
Vio Vicencio.
Okay.
Pablo Villa Vicencio
is a piece of delivery man who may be deported to his home country of Ecuador after he was turned over to immigration officials after trying to drop off pizza at a military base in New York. Damn, so much for a sanctuary city, right? For people who don't know, sanctuary cities refer to municipal jurisdictions that limit the cooperation of the nation's government's efforts to enforce immigration law. So in a roundabout way, in places like New York and Philly, immigrants can like live and work, and they aren't, for the most part,
also Lancaster,
like, hassled by the government. Immigrants should feel safe in cities like New York and Philly because in many ways, these are the only places they're allowed to be safe in the U.S. When Pablo arrived at Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn last week, he showed his New York City identification card to the guard like he usually did, but the guard then told him that he needed a valid Department of Defense identification. So he was asked to get a daily visitor's pass. But to get a daily visitor's pass, you also have to sign a waiver like that permitted them to conduct the background check. But when they conducted that background check, it was revealed that there was a warrant out for his deportation. The thing is, in February, he had began his application for a green card, but according to a spokeswoman from ICE, an application for a green card wouldn't prevent his deportation.
Wait, what was he getting deported for? Like, I don't understand why people are getting deported for doing the shit that you asked them to do. If you say to them, go get citizenship,
yeah, like he
and
has
go
a
get
job
a card, and do all this shit, and they're doing it, why are they being deported? And it's literally like, I'm going to do the right thing, and I show up at fucking hell's door, and Satan still sticks me in the ass with a fucking hot poker. Like, I don't understand. If there's somebody who is literally coming up to you and saying, I'm willing to work on your terms and do exactly what you want me to do, automatically they should be, I don't fucking know, forgiven or something.
Given a chance.
Yeah, I don't understand. Oh God, that just pisses me off so fucking. It's literally the equivalent of resisting arrest being your only fucking charge. It's fucking equivalent.
I feel like this does add a lot of context to, like, why. So, an immigration law ordered his deportation in 2010 after he overstayed his visa. And honestly, because of that, I'm not exactly sure what my stance is, being as though he's been here for 8 years as a fugitive. It's like, at the end of the day, America's, I know we definitely do, we're in dire need of immigration reform, but America's, is mode to naturalization isn't nearly as harsh as our contemporaries. And if you break laws, you break laws. I really can't defend that. He's been living here illegally as a fugitive for almost 10 years. At some point, we do have to draw a line. I wouldn't say that he's a martyr for immigration reform, but then again, what's the point of living in a sanctuary city if he can't work in peace? I thought that these cities protected the rights of the undocumented, whichever rights they do have, because it's not looking like a lot at the moment. So while being critical of him and his situation, I have to say that this read was disheartening. He was a hardworking man who loved his wife and his kids. Isn't that supposed to be the American dream?
I agree, and I do understand the whole, you break the law, you should be dealt with. But in that same regard, it's a fucking expired visa. The man got a job that I'm pretty sure he has to pay. And, I'm pretty sure he's paying taxes. Because anywhere you go, anything you purchase, anything you buy, you pay a tax on it. So the man got a job. He got a wife. He got a kid. He literally didn't cause any harm, trouble, nothing. He wasn't some crazy, deranged white dude who shoots up schools and movie theaters. I don't understand how that is on the higher list of priority, especially when he's adamantly working towards getting his green card. And I feel like too often with immigration, we constantly keep hearing this, go get your green card, go get your green card. It's not like you can literally walk in, sign a paper, and it's just done. It's literally, oh, I got access into this country, I want to apply for permanent residency, and I go to do all those things, and while I'm trying to do that, if I get deported back to my home country, there's literally almost impossible to no access for me to actually become a permanent resident. Like, damn, you know how much it costs for me to get a fucking flight to California? Like, goddamn, if I live in, a third world country or some shit, and I get my ass into America, I'm not fucking leaving here until I get permanent residency. Because going back, I'm never coming back this way. It doesn't fucking make any sense.
It literally takes thousands of dollars.
It's a long-ass process. It's a long-ass process.
You need to afford an immigration lawyer. You need to... You're, just watching my cousins go through that. But, the way it worked in my family is a lot different than the way it probably would have worked for Pablo and his family, only because, we're of a different economic class. like if you have the money for immigration lawyers, right? You have the money to become a
naturalized citizen. You have the money to catch flights. You have the money to study the history. You have the money to do all and the access to do all those things. It's a different fucking story.
Yeah, Pablo ain't had the time for that.
Pablo's paying his taxes. Pablo's staying out of jail. Pablo has a job. Pablo is taking care of his wife and kids. I don't understand why it's an issue. It's like, what gets me more is like, nobody. What kills me is the fact that people are like, they're taking our jobs. Really?
I actually saw someone say that on Facebook today.
You don't want to be a pizza delivery dude. You laugh at people who flip
If right. you want to be a pizza man, that bad.
You
laugh at people who flip
burgers. You say that they don't deserve $18 an hour. You say that people who flip burgers don't deserve $15 a fucking hour. You can open your mouth and say that shit, but then you turn around and say, Pablo's taking my job. How? You don't want to flip burgers. You don't want to take out the trash. You don't want to be a pizza delivery dude who's getting paid under the table $2. You don't want to do those jobs. You're not even putting your application in for those jobs. And I'm pretty sure that if you were, you would be chosen over Pablo. That's the reality. On top of that, you have access to government support. You have access to food stamps. You have access to medical coverage. You have access to all these things that Pablo doesn't want. He's getting his ass up every day and going to a job that literally will not benefit him in the long run. I don't understand what the fucking issue is. And what kills me more is the amount of people who say this shit as Americans who have an issue with immigration, but they'll take their asses to fucking France and Italy and Russia and all these other places to go tour and visit every fucking summer. I'm like, you got hella money to be doing that shit. If I'm trying to escape violence or poverty or issues or be with most of where my family is, I'm going to do what I have to do to get there. I don't understand. I don't understand. The man broke the law. Oh my God. Get over it. It's a fucking slap on the wrist. Like, who cares? But to deport somebody? No.
I just think, another thing that really hurts is the fact that the way he got deported. Like, it'd be different if, he was deported during a crime. He was deported on the job. Like, he actually went to the
army. Everything he was asked to do.
Was like, okay, I'm here to drop off the pizza. They were like, wait a minute. You can't drop off the pizza without an ID. He shows them his ID, and they're like, this ain't the right type of ID. And they made him jump through all these hoops just to deliver a damn pizza. And, like, is wow.
The fact that white people got to come to this damn country, steal shit, do whatever the hell grimy guns, germs, and steal bullshit they wanted to, and got away with it. Nobody deported their asses back on a boat or any place. Nobody says shit to them. Now that they're all fucking established, it's an issue because the people who are immigrating to this country are named Pablo and not Paul. Get the fuck out of here. I just, this whole thing is just,
Yeah, like, when I went to the tenements inside of New York, right? But I think, like, the Italian lady, she came here under, like, her dead cousin's name. And, she pretty much lived as her dead cousin for, like, 40 years. Then the American government was like, hey, you know what? If you came here with a fake name, you could go to Canada, you could come back into the U.S., we'll pardon you. All you have to do is give us, like, your accurate name, you know what I'm saying? And we can make you a U.S. citizen. So, like, the fact that the U.S. has done that at least 2 to 3 times, but they can't even think about doing that for Latinx people or immigrants coming from the Caribbean or immigrants coming from West Africa. That's wild. But then again, I guess, like, the system is only going to work for the people that you want it to work for. So, Unruly USA is a clothing brand created by Twitter user A_Saint. His brand has urban aesthetics while also focusing on affordability and black power themes. And this brand is truly unruly. Keep the name. From its extensive use of black models, his rebellious themes, Unruly is something the world should really be worried about.
All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in this week, and be sure to catch us next week with new content, commentary, and mess. Episodes are posted each Tuesday at 7 p.m. Have a good week, y'all.
Woo! Bye, guys.
Signing up.